Let's consider a few more examples of the kind of law and practice that is generated out of this corrected view of the state that depends on sphere sovereignty and its type law. Again, I'm going to contrast these examples with the view that Jefferson expressed, that rights are only subjective, they're only in the person, and they're in each individual, but they are not norms for all society, and therefore cover communities as well. This has run into even more severe difficulties, because many people have now contended that a person can have a right, a subjective right, only if they can understand it and desire what it ensures. What's the point of saying somebody has a right if a right is their subjective condition and they don't understand the right and don't want what it ensures to other people? Then they don't really have the right. And in other words, they claim that rights develop along with the biological development of each individual and relative to how well the right is understood and can be appreciated. If that's true, though, then infants, the severely retarded, the senile, and anyone in a coma has no rights, because they are not understanding the right or desiring what it ensures. And it's not too big a stretch to say if they have no rights whatever, then it's okay to kill them. Or take a normal person who's transported from some more primitive society into a modern state. It's going to take that person a while to understand the notion of rights and the legal system and to appreciate what the rights guarantee him or her. Does that mean that until and unless they understand all that, they don't have those rights? Those are such horrid consequences that I'm sure, they are such horrid, awful consequences that I'm sure that we don't want to be taking that position. There's another issue that comes up concerning rights if they are only subjective conditions of individuals. How do we identify them? Jefferson says all men are created equal. That's clearly an idea he got out of the Bible, that everyone is created in the image of God and therefore should have equal legal standing. We know that he knew that because his first draft of the Declaration didn't say that all men, it's self-evident that all men have those rights. The first draft said, we hold it to be sacred and undeniable that all men are created equal. So there was a direct reference to the scriptural source of that belief. Franklin's the one who talked him into taking out sacred and putting self-evident. But even so, how do we identify the rights? How do you know which rights people are born with? You see, it's easy to say if the guarantor of the rights is the norm of justice. All people are to be treated with justice. All people are to be treated with love. We're going to make the laws to make sure that injustices cannot be visited on someone without risking punishment. But he hasn't got that. He's kissed that off. In which case, people can claim anything as a right. And they often do. In other words, rights degenerate into desires. It's not the case that anything I may desire I have a right to. But that's the way it turns out. Okay, you don't want to do that. We'll say it's our right. How would you know? Well, from the view expounded by Kuyper and filled out and elaborated at great length by Doybert, if you first start with the qualifying, the leading function of the state, you look at sphere sovereignty as the background, you look at the type law for the state, now you ask what's just in this immediate circumstance, then you could say people have these rights. They need to be, in the interest of justice, this is what needs to be guaranteed. Not just anything they desire. Not only that, we need to have the distinction for politics between legal rights and moral rights, or legal goods and moral goods. And this distinction, though it's obvious in our sphere sovereignty view, when we list the aspects, justice is one, that's what's fair, it's giving every man his due. That's the old expression for it. But love has to do with love your neighbor as yourself. So justice and morality aren't the same thing. And if you don't distinguish those two, you'll end up arguing, the way some people have, I've read some of this, that because someone has a certain moral right, they also have a, because one person has a moral obligation, the other person has a legal right. That doesn't follow. You've shifted the meaning of a term that's called equivocation in logic. For example, I am under a moral obligation to aid the poor. Every Christian is. It's our moral obligation to aid the poor. That doesn't mean that every poor person has the legal right to be to my money. You can't go from the moral sense to the legal that way. In Jesus' story of the Good Samaritan, the Samaritan sees somebody who's been beaten and left by the side of the road. The man is going to die. He takes him to the inn. He pays the innkeeper, take care of him, see that he gets well. That's an act of love. It's over and above. The Good Samaritan didn't know the man that was hurt, but he saw somebody in need. That fulfills the commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. It's a wonderful example of it. The Good Samaritan, however, was not under legal obligation to do that. It was a moral obligation. Finally, we might have some reservations, or some of you might be asking, well, how does this theory fare in relation to what's known in the United States as the wall of separation between church and state? Jefferson is the one who coined that expression. And what he meant was that he didn't want churches to tell their members that this, that, or the other law, pending law, was wrong, or that we need a certain law, and then have the church be dictating to the state what it should do. There's an element of truth in this, and there's an exaggeration that's falsehood. In the first place, no two institutions in the same society can really be walled off from each other. It's not even the case that you have to make a rule that says that if an individual citizen is a citizen of a state and a member of a church, that that citizen can't serve in the government or serve on the board of a church. That's not it. It's the qualifying natures of each. Each has a different qualifying leading function. So the same person can function in both of them, but puts on a different hat when he goes to church and puts on a different hat when he goes to the legislature. It's not that the religion is going to dictate the laws. The laws are the one, are for the state, are the ones that people, in good faith, on reflection, on the commandment to be just and fair to all people, try to work out that to the best of their ability. It means what Jefferson was worried about was the state taking orders from a church. This doesn't violate that at all. The proper activity of both church and state is here defined more clearly than it has been in the past in U.S. jurisprudence. And these are some of the benefits, only some, that we can point to that accrue to us if we start by looking for a distinctly Christian theory of reality. We distinguish the kinds of properties and laws that things exhibit, and we look for the relationships between those. We look for what qualifies a thing that is the highest aspect in which it functions, has its properties actively, and the laws of which govern its internal organization taken as a whole. We look at artifacts and their distinctive kind of nature, where they're produced by human formation, but then qualified by different leading functions which, in which they have properties only passively. Then we look at the state as a particular example of one such institution. We look at the sphere of sovereignty as the theory for how the different elements in society should relate, the distinctions between them and the different institutions. No one in charge of the others. No one should encroach upon the others. The state has committed to its charge public justice. That's right. But that doesn't mean that the state can interfere with parents from raising their children. But if a crime was being committed, it would be then a matter for the state. The state may not interfere by forcing everybody to be the member of one church. But if members of a church are having a severe dispute over property or something, the state has a right to step in and adjudicate. That kind of thing is very powerful and very liberating. Then we look at the type law for a state. And we see that it's the relation of might and right, and that the right needs to control and check the use of power at all points. And it needs to do it effectively. Otherwise, this runs away. The might takes over and does whatever it wants. And then finally, we take specific instances of how this prescribes the relationship between different institutions. In the last one, we ended up with state and the church. I hope you find this helpful. I have found it enormously so. And there is a great deal more to read and be said about it. There are many examples of laws that need to be passed, laws that shouldn't be on the books, in the light of this view of the proper role of the state. And with that, we end.